I call the meeting of the Water Division to order. Quorum is present. The first thing we need to do is address the minutes, and I was wondering, Representative Haley, have you taken a look at the minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'll move approval of the minutes.
Okay, Representative Haley moves the approval of the February 11th, 2019 minutes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The minutes are approved. The first bill we have today is going to be 875, which is my bill, so I'm going to have Vice Chair Sandell slide over here.
Chair Fisher, do you move that the House File 875 be referred to the Environment Finance Division?
Yes, I do.
Chair Fisher, then will you please present your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committees, this bill is a item that came to us last year. First of all, I want to say thank you to Representative Torkelson and also Representative Fabian, who helped me with this bill last year. It's something that we had in a larger omnibus bill that we weren't able to get through, so we're bringing it back again this year. This is a bill that addresses the Clean Water Legacy Act, and basically what it does is it helps streamline the planning process we have right now. Is when people want to do planning to protect waters, they have to do a separate planning process for each area. So if you're dealing with impaired waters, you start one planning process. Now, if you want to do a planning process to protect drinking water, you've got to have another process. And then likewise, if you want to deal with surface waters, you have a third process. And so what this bill basically does is allow us to do all this planning at one time instead of having so many different planning processes going on. It allows us to become much more efficient and much more effective in approaching our waters in a one approach instead of fractured as it is now. What I'd like to do is walk through the bill briefly. The first section that we have is Section 1, Subdivision 5. And what this section does is it removes unnecessary artifacts from the late 1980s. Parts of this bill have been in existence for a long time, addressing areas that we no longer do. It also provides an easier option for pass-through amounts from state funding to local governments. It's to be more efficient and support a watershed approach to fund large and multi-participant water quality projects. Next section that we have is Section 3, Subdivision 2. It notes that comprehensive watershed management plans, an example, the One Watershed, One Plan, which are developed jointly by local governments on a watershed boundary, can serve to fill some of the elements and purposes of the water quality improvements in the Clean Water Legacy Act. It allows for crossover. Next section we have is Section 4, Subdivision 5. This clarifies the biennial interval for Bowser to propose potential changes to the state plan and to fully transition to the watershed-based plans on a statewide basis by 2025, as long as we have the funding there to meet it. Next, we have Section 5, Subdivisions 3A, and Section 6, Subdivision 3B. These terms being defined consistently across chapters and making sure we've got technical improvements that are adding to uniformity as we're bringing different sections together. Sometimes it's not always been a smooth interaction. We want to make sure that we're using the same terms in each different area as we're doing the planning. Section 7 updates the restoration term to align with Minnesota's broad and comprehensive watershed approach to water quality improvements. Section 8, Subdivision 11, updates the term of Total Maximum Daily Load Implementation Plan, also known as TMDL. This allows a comprehensive watershed management plans to serve as the implementation plan for a total maximum daily load when the plan is designed and then determined by the MPCA to achieve the applicable water quality standards. Section 9, Subdivision 13, allows watershed access areas to acknowledge practical factors such as when watersheds cross state boundaries and clarifies that a primary use of a watershed scientific data and analysis is for implementation purposes. Section 10, Subdivision 2, updates to better reflect the process innovation. addressing RAPs and the One Watershed Plan to make sure that they are developed and coordinated in coordination with the Clean Water Legacy Act. Then we have Section 12, Subdivision 5, Section 13, Subdivision 7. It reflects the reality that the MPCA, rather than the Clean Water Council, sets operational priorities for scheduling plans for addressing RAPs and total maximum daily loads. And it also requires the MPCA to consult with the Clean Water Council and other agencies in prioritizing and scheduling them to make sure that we're getting as much input across the board as possible. Then we have Section 14. This Section 14, Subdivision 5, this new subdivision provides a mechanism for the MPCA to use elements of Minnesota's locally led watershed management programs to substitute for TMLDs and RAPs or an implementation plan for a TMLD under the specific circumstances. This change is being processed to enhance the efficiency of state and local planning and strategy efforts. This would allow more rapid and efficient from moving from assessment to planning action, better incorporate scientific data and issuance of water quality improvements into locally led watershed management plans, and provide flexibility so that each watershed can be uniquely addressed based upon its needs. And at that, I have several testifiers that I'd like to turn to. I'd like to first start with Emily Javins here. We'll start with Jay Riggs.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
If you could introduce yourself for the committee.
Thank you. Chair, members of the committee, hello, my name is Jay Riggs. I'm the district manager of the Washington Conservation District. I'm here representing my elected board of officials, board of supervisors, as well as the Minnesota Association of Saltwater Conservation Districts. Leanne is on vacation and couldn't be here today. Thank you for the opportunity to provide comments on the Clean Water Legacy Act modifications. We're here today with the watersheds, the counties, and entities that we commonly work with as part of the local government roundtable. And that process was used to identify efficient and streamlined approaches to surface and groundwater planning and management in Minnesota. Accordingly, we support House File 875. This bill does provide for modifications that will allow SWCDs and our partners to move more quickly beyond assessing and planning to accelerate implementation of best management practices on the landscape. The bill before you today is acknowledging previous policy and moves us forward to removing redundancies between state and local watershed planning, and as a result, empowers local governments to get more boots on the ground and work together on more activities related to improving surface and groundwater throughout the state. We have completed multiple TMDLs in Washington County. We have multiple RAPs that have been completed. We have the St. Croix TMDL. We have a number of processes in place. We're very familiar with these efforts and believe very strongly that this bill will make it so we have much more streamlined implementation in the future. On a daily basis, we work with landowners and residents and see the benefits of the Clean Water Legacy Act through efficient prioritization efforts and on-the-ground implementation. We are also partnering with 16 SWCDs, watersheds, and counties to implement the Lower St. Croix One Watershed, One Plan. And this plan helps us improve our water quality through comprehensive strategies that include science, partnership, and flexibility for conservation practices that meets the needs of local landowners and state standards. And this process provides an opportunity to identify shared priorities, implement scale-appropriate resource management. So once again, we do support this file. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Riggs. Are there any questions?
Our next testifier then will be Ms. Emily Javins.
Thank you, Chair and members. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Watershed Districts, and before I was in this role, I was at the Yellow Medicine River Watershed District and worked on one of the pilot One Watershed, One Plans. And while we were there, we did find that during that pilot that there were some things that worked really well and some things where we thought, oh, shoot, I wish we could do that a little differently. And so that's what brought this bill together. Some of the great things that worked really well was the state empowered us with a lot of data. They did the intensive monitoring, built us a fantastic model, and then gave us a tool that we could select different best management practices to implement on the landscape, and we could see what would happen to the water if that was implemented. And but the problem was, at about the same time we were doing that plan, the Watershed Restoration Protection Strategy Project was going on. And they came in and asked the citizens some questions, came up with a whole strategy, the S in RAPS, his strategy, for how we could clean up the water bodies. And then a few months later, we were trying to put together our implementation plan for One Watershed, One Plan, and we came up with a different way we could clean up the water that was a little bit, that fit probably what the locals knew would work a little bit better in their area. And still yet, we still have one more plan that the state should come in and do because it's required by law, and that would be to write a TMDL implementation plan. But we've already got two strategies that are written down that, that will work to clean up the waters. It will suffice. So this bill is, what it's doing is making sure that those laws, all were good laws, but they were created at different times, and they are doing some duplicative efforts that we just don't need. And if we can get that cleaned up, then we can put more of our energy and emphasis into implementation and actually cleaning the water up and not just thinking about how we're going to do that. So the watershed districts are in full support of House File 875. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Javins. Is there any questions from the committee for Ms. Javins? One more testifier?
Right. Thank you. We have one more testifier, Mr. Chair, and I believe that's Brian Martinson. If you could go ahead and introduce yourself before your phone.
Hello, Chair and members. I'm Brian Martinson. I'm the Environment and Natural Resources Policy Analyst with the Association of Minnesota Counties. I'd like to start by thanking Representative Fisher for his work on this legislation and his dedication to making sure that Minnesota's public policies on natural resources work. I'm here to express AMC's support for House File 875. This legislation updates and reforms the state statute so that we, the state, counties, watersheds, and SWCDs, can more efficiently coordinate our clean water efforts. It also provides flexibility and access to needed resources. I would encourage your support of House File 875 in order to create process efficiencies across entities that are responsible for the protection and improvement of our water resources. Thank you.
Mr. Martinson, thank you. Are there any questions from the committee for Mr. Martinson or other members of the testifying group? Is there anyone in the audience who would like to comment on the proposed legislation? Hearing none, Chair Fisher, do you have any final comments on your bill?
I just want to thank the committee. I will give the committee the heads up that there was a little input at the first stop we had. There will be an amendment that will be prepared to address a few items on clarifying what funds are tied to outcomes and what funds are not tied to outcomes, and that will be presented at our next stop.
Well, Chair Fisher renews his motion that House File 875 be referred to the Environment Finance Commission. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? The motion carries.
Okay, next we have on the agenda today is House File 797, Representative Lippert. Members, this was referred to the Water Division by the Environment Finance Division. I will move that House File 797 be referred to the Environment Finance Division. Representative Lippert, I believe you have an author's amendment. Could you please explain your author's amendment?
Yes, the author's amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Originally, the bill was written for $100,000 to be appropriated to be sent to the DNR for dispersal for this storm debris removal, and the author's amendment will be changing that to provide grants to local units of government for removal of storm debris at Roberts Lake.
Okay. I will move the A1 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Representative Lippert, please explain your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In late September, there was a strong thunderstorm that moved through southeast Minnesota, and it spawned many tornadoes that did a tremendous amount of damage to the region. And Roberts Lake, which is a local recreation, a regional recreation destination, received a tremendous amount of damage. There's been quite a bit of cleanup that's happened already at Roberts Lake, but there's still a tremendous amount of storm debris that's in the lake itself, and so there's safety concerns as there are boat docks, metal roof debris in the lake. As people are kind of turning towards summer, we'll be turning towards summer and recreation plans, there are real safety concerns at Roberts Lake. Those who live around the lake and frequent the lake want that debris cleaned up. And so this bill is being carried by Senator Jasinski in the Senate, and it asks for $100,000 to be directed to local units of government for cleanup in Roberts Lake.
Okay, thank you, Representative Lippert. Are there any questions for Representative Lippert? Is there anyone here in the audience that would like to testify for or against this bill? Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Hadley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Being new to the Water Committee here, I just have a question if this is typical appropriation, or if city governments, county governments, do they provide a match, or is it typical that a city would address cleanup? Sort of what's the protocol? The same tornado in this area went partly through my district as well in Cannon Falls, and I know what you mean about the damage and the cleanup. So just kind of asking for some background on what we traditionally do.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. I was in conversation with Senator Jasinski about this too. The local government, county government, and the Cannon River Watershed Partnership, they're all working together on this for debris cleanup. Senator Jasinski's office came up with the $100,000 number, but they will be in conversation over time as this moves through the process to be refining that number to make sure it's accurate for debris removal in this particular instance.
Representative Hallie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So can you clarify, is there a local match from city government or county government at all?
Representative Lippert.
I don't know if there's some from the DNR here that might be able to address that question too.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself.
Hello. Thank you, Chair. I am Julie Ekman with the DNR. I am a section manager in our Ecological and Water Resources Division. And we have been working on this bill language, and as to whether or not there would be a match, that is something that could be worked out. We haven't worked in those details yet, but we do have grant programs at the DNR for other kinds of disaster and cleanup types of work.
Any further questions? Hearing none, I will renew my motion that House File 797, as amended, be recommended to the re-referred to the Environment Finance Division. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Next item on the agenda is House File 1314. It is up for consideration today. Was referred to us by the Water Division by the Environment Finance Committee. I will move that House File 1314 be recommended to be re-referred to the Environment Finance Division. Representative Lippert, please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this is a bill appropriating money to expand the Department of Health's source water protection program to include rivers and sources of drinking water for private wells. I'm going to turn it over to Jim Stark to explain more of the details of the bill and the background on this bill as well.
Certainly, Mr. Stark.
Mr. Chair and members,
For the record, my name is Jim Stark. I'm the director of the Legislative Water Commission. This bill is one of 13 recommended by the Legislative Water Commission. These bills are the result of the commission's review of existing water-related reports and recommendations. And based on that review, the commission conducted a series of stakeholder workshops over the interim to prioritize more than 100 recommendations that came out of those reports. Those were followed by a survey to more than 500 stakeholders. The process resulted in 13 recommendations that the commission has reached consensus on. This bill is about expanding source water protection and is one of those recommendations. The commission recommends that priority be given to expanding source water protection to private wells and to rivers that supply drinking water to citizens of the state. The safety of our drinking water is one of the most critical responsibilities of government. Safe drinking water has been the key to some of the greatest public health achievements over the last half century. The value of water resources goes beyond human health and the health of our environment. Jobs and economic development depend on reliable sources of clean and safe water. Investments in water protection are key to local economies. In order to protect your drinking water, we need to expand existing source water programs to the protection of rivers and to the protection of aquifers that are vulnerable and that supply drinking water to the public and from private wells and from rivers. The Minnesota Department of Health has delegated authority from the EPA to regulate 13,000 public and non-community water systems in Minnesota. Source water protection for public water supplies is a really important part of the mission of the Minnesota Department of Health, and they do that very well. However, source water protection for aquifers that supply water to private wells and to rivers and lakes that supply water to our cities are not managed with the same level of scrutiny. There are about 1.1 million Minnesotans who receive drinking water from private wells. The Minnesota Department of Health's well code ensures that those wells are properly constructed. However, after they're put into service, private well owners have responsibility for their own wells. The MDA and the MDH receive some clean water and federal funds to evaluate contaminants in private wells and to develop programs to protect private wells and their users. However, those programs are not adequately funded. The Minnesota Department of Agriculture is the lead agency for addressing groundwater contamination from agricultural chemicals. The agency is implementing the legislatively mandated pesticide management plan and the nitrogen fertilizer management plan. These plans describe strategies for reducing pesticides and nitrate in groundwater. They also include a process for developing and promoting best management practices and other practices, including vegetative cover in areas vulnerable to groundwater contamination. These efforts include sampling private wells and working with farmers to implement selected practices to reduce nitrates. Approximately 11% of private wells that have been tested in vulnerable areas exceed drinking water standards for nitrate. Minnesota Department of Agriculture has developed the proposed groundwater protection rule, which could address potential sources of nitrate pollution to groundwater and protect drinking water. We need to increase sampling to identify our most vulnerable aquifers that are significant sources of private drinking water. We need to identify areas where incentives will protect vulnerable aquifers that are important sources of domestic drinking water. Additional sampling analysis is needed to identify these areas and to prepare strategies for reducing pesticides and nitrate in groundwater. We need to find the best ways to support the Clean Water Council's recommendations that provide policy and market-driven approaches to increase continuous vegetative cover on cropland overlying those vulnerable aquifers. Source water protection is also needed for our rivers that supply drinking water. This will be a complex process due to the size and political subdivisions in the large areas upstream of, for example, the Twin Cities. As a first step, This bill will develop a first alert monitoring program upstream of two major water intakes. This would provide an alert for state water for water utilities and could be implemented above other water intakes in the state if it's successful. There is another bill in process to assess a wide variety of non-regulated contaminants in rivers used as sources of drinking water. I believe this effort would complement the work proposed in that bill. Finally, we need to increase public outreach and education regarding possible contaminants in drinking water used for private wells. This bill also addresses that issue. The intent of this bill is really quite simple. It seeks to increase source water protection efforts for all of the residents of Minnesota. Specifically, the bill would map our most vulnerable aquifers that are primary sources of private drinking water, revise and tune policy and incentive plans to protect vulnerable aquifers, target additional groundwater monitoring to assess potential threats to private wells, develop plans for implementing a pilot real-time monitoring system in rivers above water intakes, and improve public information and education about contaminants in drinking water. This work is proposed to be conducted by the Minnesota Department of Health, Agriculture, and the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Mr. Chair, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stark. Any questions for Mr. Stark? Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Looking at the money side of this again, previous bill was discussed as well. The appropriation is open. I'm also wondering what monies are, or what fund are we drawing on to cover the cost for this?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Chair, Representative Heinzman, we don't have a fiscal note for this bill yet. We need to discuss that with the Department of Agriculture and Health and PCA, but at this point, these would be considered as general fund dollars.
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm also wondering, we have some on line 1.12, we're talking about collecting new water quality information, and I think, Jim, you covered that to some extent, but I was just going to confirm, are we talking very specifically about private wells and some water testing, or is it more extensive than that?
Mr. Stark.
Mr. Chair, Representative Heisman, this specifically would involve testing private wells and wells over vulnerable aquifers that are used for private wells. So it extends and expands on the work that the Department of Agriculture now has underway.
Representative Heinzman.
The thing that kind of popped into my mind when I heard you talking about that, I'm assuming to some extent we're already doing that. Mm. This is just what codifying this or putting this into a policy.
Mr. Sark.
Mr. Chair, Representative Heinzman, we are doing some of that work, but I think and maybe we would want to call down someone from the Department of Agriculture. I believe that they feel that monitoring and sampling work is not adequate to define those areas that are most vulnerable, and it needs to be expanded.
Any other questions for Mr. Stark? Hearing none, we do have another testifier coming down. Welcome to the committee. If you'd like to identify yourself and who you're with.
Good afternoon, members. My name is Nels Paulson. I'm the Policy Director for Conservation Minnesota. And you'll find a letter of support from Conservation Minnesota in your packets. I think Jim did a good job of highlighting what the bill is about, but I just wanted to point out two parts of the bill that we really appreciate. The bill does a really good job of getting more information out to particularly private well owners, and I think the more information these well owners have, the better decisions they can make for themselves and for their families. And the bill also asks the Department of Health to provide a report to this body, to the legislature, in November of 2020 with policy recommendations on how to help every Minnesotan ensure that they have access to safe drinking water. And one of the final parts of this bill that I thought was really important was that the Commissioners of Agriculture, Natural Resources, the Pollution Control Agency, and all other state agencies must cooperate with health in the implementation of this act. I think that makes a lot of sense, and Conservation Minnesota fully supports House File 1314.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Paulson. Is there any questions for this testifier, Representative Torkelson?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my question would probably go to the author. You know, we already do a lot of testing of surface waters. We've talked about the well water or well situation quite a bit here. We haven't talked so much about surface waters. What do you envision more we would do to test our surface waters and how that would impact drinking water? Mr. Stark?
Mr. Stark.
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, we do. However, there are a whole variety of non-regulated compounds, chemicals that we don't test for. But specifically, this pilot would really encompasses a first alert for activities like spills that could occur directly above the intakes for our major water supplies, which are on rivers. So we don't have, in general, an adequate early warning for the utilities that draw large amounts of water directly from the rivers. There's all kinds of potential rail crossings, spills from freeways that could affect the water, and the technology has improved dramatically in the ability to detect those organic compounds in real time and warn the utilities to address the need to possibly turn off their intakes for a short time.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Dark. Any further questions for Representative Torkelson?
No.
Any other questions on this bill? Is there anyone in the audience who would like to speak in favor or against this bill? Hearing none, Representative Lippert, are there any final comments?
No, I'd just like to thank the committee and urge support of the bill.
Okay, very good. I just want to reference and remind the committee that in the packet there was a letter from the Minnesota Well Owners Organization in support of this bill also. At this time, I will renew my motion that House File 1314 be recommended to re-refer to the Environment Finance Division. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Motion prevails. Next item we have on the agenda today for consideration is House File 663. It was referred to the Water Division by the Environmental Finance Division. I will move that House File 663 be recommended to be re-referred to the Environment Finance Division. At this point in time, I would like to welcome our Representative Stanstead and,
Representative Lissgard.
Thank you. Lissgard to the testifier table. Representative Stanstead, if you'd like to go ahead and present the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon. Good afternoon, members. Before you, you have House File 663. House File 663 is a request for one-time general fund appropriations in the amount of $4.5 million for the DNR to perform monitoring, modeling, testing, pit slope stability studies, surveys, and engineering design, leading to mitigating threats due to rising water in the Canisteo Mine Complex, the Hill Annex Mine Complex, and the St. James Pit. Just a little bit of background, iron ore mining has been the economic backbone of northeastern Minnesota, and much of the iron ore produced provided major income for the state and its residents. Many of the open pit natural ore mines have been idle since the 70s and 80s, and as mining ceased, pumping of the water stopped from those mines, resulting in pit water rising because of a lack of a natural outlet. These rising water levels lead to threats to public safety, for example, uncontrolled water flowage with damage to public and private property, bank sloughing, public nuisance hazards, and possible damage to surface and groundwater quality. These concerns, I feel, are best addressed before they result in significant damage or loss of life. The DNR staff is capable of addressing these issues if they have the funding appropriate or the funding necessary. And the Hill Annex Legacy Pit has been rising unchecked and now and has now risen to the level where it can enter groundwater and lead to increased likelihood of slope failures that endanger public property, private property, and public safety. We believe that the $4.5 million request for an appropriation to the DNR will be for the funds will be well spent to avoid prevent a growing threat to the lives or public and private property and to water resources. That funding level is not adequate for construction, and if construction is deemed necessary, then we would go back and look at bonding money for that.
And then also we have Representative Lillisgard, who has one of his communities involved with the bill. If I could have Representative Lillisgard talk and present that part, I would appreciate it.
Sure. Me speaking on behalf of as a former mayor, that is our drinking water. And with the pit rising, we have came to a point last year alone up within six inches of our pump house. And if that floods, then we have no water. So this is a serious issue, and it is does fall underneath the DNR's responsibility. And we are working closely with the DNR in monitoring, and we look forward to working with them continuously. So I don't know if we bring forward any amendments or.
Thank you, Representative Lillisgard. We have a DE2 amendment. Because it was not introduced in time, we will not be acting on it today. This will be added on at the next stop at the Environment Finance Division. So at this point in time, give you a chance to talk a little bit. There was a minor change that was done in the DE here. If you'd like to present that once again to the committee, we will not be acting on this DE amendment that will be presented at the next division. But because we're aware of it, we want to make sure that the committee had all information available for any questions that may come up. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What the DE does is basically add the word pumping. And we are adding that to the overall language of the bill. Because these levels are becoming so high, and I use the word kind of hitting critical mass, in the event, should this money be appropriated and the studies are being done, should an emergency situation arise in the course of that study or, you know, taking action, there would be money, or they could use the money for the purpose of remedying that emergent situation.
Very good. Are there any questions, Representative Sundin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lillisgard, you say you get drinking water from the
Lake St. James. That is
Lake
correct.
Lake St. James, okay.
Mr. Chair, that's the pit.
Representative. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's the pit behind Aurora?
Representative Lillisgard.
Mr. Chair, Representative Sundin, that is correct.
Could you tell me?
Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you tell me, are there other communities that drive their drinking water from those mining pits?
Representative Lillisgard.
Mr. Chair, Representative Sundin, that is correct. The town of White also gets their drinking water out of there. There are several communities that get their drinking water out of various pits across the Iron Range.
Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are those pits used for other recreational purposes, fishing, that type of thing?
Representative Lillisgard, thank you.
Mr. Chair and Representative Sundin, yes, there are some very good trout lakes in there as well, yes.
Representative Sundin?
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, we're driving this out. That's very clean water up there.
Representative Lillisgard.
Mr. Chair and Representative Sundin, we are extremely proud of how clean our water is up there.
Yeah. Thank you.
Mr. Chair,
if yes, I may, represent Stanseed.
They're also excellent for cliff jumping. I just wanted to add that.
Off record.
Representative Sundin, any further questions?
No, thank you. I thank the author, Representative Stanseed, for the bill.
Representative Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Stanseed, I'm just wondering if you looked at, are there other funds that could be used for this other than general fund money, and then you said obviously if there's construction needed, then you could have a bonding request. But did you look at other sources of funds?
Representative Sandstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. Yes, probably not an exhaustive list. This has been a situation that we've been working with, at least on the western end of the range, for 10 years or longer. Private money has been invested. I'm not 100% sure whether agency, IRRRB agency money has been invested, but that there are potentials of other sources as well. Thank you.
Are there any further questions? Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you. Is there like a cliff jumping celebration that I can come and attend so I can watch Representative Sundin jump into water?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I think only for high schoolers. I'm not sure.
Well, I thank Mr. Chair. I hope people are safe when they do things like that. How quickly is this water rising, and are there no natural outlets to these pits?
Representative Sandstein.
Mr. Chair and Representative, thank you for that question. There are lower elevations, but not a natural outlet right now. Those outlets had been done through pumping when there was active mining taking place. And since the mining has ceased, there has not been anything as a natural outlet taking place. They rise, you know, it varies from year to year depending on the weather, the amount of rain, the amount of snow, different things like that. It's very weather driven, but historically they've been rising faster than we're comfortable with.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify for or against this bill? Hearing none, I renew my motion that House File 663 be recommended to referred to the Environment Finance Division. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, motion prevails. Next item we have on the agenda today is House File 1141. And members, this is House File 1141 was referred to the Water Division by the Environment Division. I will move that House File 1141 be recommended be re-referred to the Environment Finance Division. Representative Sandell, please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Since this is my first bill before this committee, I do have a moment for celebration. And maybe Representative Morrison, I'll carry these around if you would distribute them for me.
Certainly, Representative.
Thank you. Go on.
Well, Representative Sandell, it's so quaint that we're talking about water and we have bottles of water being distributed. Thank you. At this point, I will let you go ahead and present your bill.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. Members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to talk to you today about an issue that is both scientific and emotional, I think. There's a tiny creek that flows through my neighbor's land, down the slight hill behind his house, through a culvert and under the dead-end road toward the end of the pond, about a half mile down the road. The creek is too small for fish or even chubs or shiners, and during the summer or dry spring, the stream dries up and its bed is a little bit more than a wet trail through the woods. But this will be a wet spring. The rain and the snow have been frequent and abundant. As much as I'm intrigued by the stream, I know little about the mystery of its beginnings. I do know a little about the importance of the pond down the road and the route the water takes after its trip to the small woods. You all know the story as well as I, the slow settling of the water through the ground, drawn by gravity and filling the fractures and cracks of the bedrock, the gravel, and the sand that make up the fragile treasure of our aquifer, and that's why I'm here today. Groundwater reserves are in decline in some parts of the state where development and heavy use has begun to threaten the water we have for our personal, our recreation, irrigation, and industry. Residents in my district in the Southeast Metro are concerned about the safety of their water, the vulnerability of the aquifer to contaminants left there 50 years ago. In an uncertain water future, it makes sense to protect that resource. We need to take steps through research and management to avoid shortages and future misuse of our water resources. Conservation and reuse of groundwater are important, but that's not enough. In other parts of the world where geology and economics make sense, in parts of Europe, Australia, India, Africa, even the western states of the United States, scientists have begun returning water captured from runoff and collected from surface water sent back into the aquifer or recharging the aquifer. House File 1141 will help us learn if that would make sense in this part of the world. House File 1141 would allocate $350,000 to the Environmental Quality Board, then by a grant to the Water Resources Center at the University of Minnesota, one of the premier water research centers in the world, to study managed groundwater recharge and report its findings back to the legislature in January 2021. The details and the science of the study are better described by Dr. Kerry Jennings, who's with me now, and who represents the Freshwater Society, one of my favorite research organizations in the area, and will provide more information for your understanding.
Dr. Jennings, if you could introduce yourself and who you're with.
My name is Kerry Jennings. I'm Research and Policy Director with Freshwater.
Awesome. Thank you. Please go ahead with your testimony.
Chair Fisher, representatives, as I have before you on this slide, these recommendations have emerged from careful study from Freshwater. We have undertaken a groundwater report series over the last 3 to 4 years. It's externally reviewed reporting that we do. I see this as translating science into action for the state. These reports have highlighted issues that you do first before groundwater recharge, and one is conservation of groundwater. The second one is reuse of groundwater, careful treatment and reuse of water. And this third strategy in our groundwater triage is to potentially recharge groundwater. As in other triage situations, you don't take the last strategy first. You wait until you have a critical patient in the emergency room. But you would want to have that tool at the ready of potentially if you need it, when you need it. And what we see in the groundwater level data that is presented by the DNR is that there are aquifers in the state, especially in the western part of the state, those in red, that have declining trends. And these are trends over decades. In places where you see multiple dots overlying one another, there are multiple aquifers with declining trends. So I draw your attention to those red dots, primarily in the southwestern part of the state, the central sand plains, and in the Red River Valley. What happens when you have groundwater trends declining in an area where you have communities sharing water with agriculture is the statute requires that drinking water has priority. This means that businesses and agriculture that have invested in infrastructure to also use that same groundwater come second. We would like to see a tool that would increase the amount of water available to all users in these areas. So that would include the many different Minnesota businesses that rely on groundwater. These are not just agribusinesses. These include restaurants, nursing homes, recreational users, any connection of surface water to groundwater that you can imagine. So what we're proposing is a study that actually leverages quite a bit of state investment. That's why we can offer it at what I feel is an affordable level, $350,000. We will be using your land-grant university, the Water Resources Center at the land-grant university, and existing state data on demographic trends, where we expect people to be located in the near future and distant future, what the climate trends are, because those do control the recharge to the aquifers, and, again, what the water trends are in those aquifers. We would also be using the County Geologic Atlas Program data because they have determined where the geology is appropriate to recharge aquifers. The DNR side of those geologic atlases tells us where the water is young, where recharge is already occurring. And we would also be determining where source waters could potentially be accessed to recharge. In the simplest scenario, I imagine treated treated wastewater being treated to drinking water standards and used. That's how it's done in other parts of the world. But those details would be left up to the expert engineers at the University of Minnesota, environmental and civil engineers, who understand the chemistry of emerging contaminants, that understand the chemistry of water reactions with the geologic media. And we have at the lead Jeff Peterson, who is an environmental economist, who would be studying when and where it makes sense to do this from an economic point of view. It might be that it will be too expensive to construct a treatment plant to do this. That is an economist's calculation to make, because there might be simpler ways or cheaper ways of getting water. And then finally, there are policy considerations, and those include current laws at the state level and also authority at the EPA level that would require some understanding, and we would have Humphrey School scholars looking at those. So that is the study that we propose, Chair Fisher, and I'll take questions.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Jennings. Questions? Representative Torkelson.
I asked too many questions. Ms. Jennings, if you go back to your groundwater level trends map that you have on your in your PowerPoint, is the size of the circle significant?
No. The small dots in the metro area, we're trying to cover a lot of data and do cover a slightly different aquifer. So I have that inset map for the metro. But otherwise, it's just stoplight colors. Red is decreasing, green is increasing, and yellow is an uncertain trend, stable or unknown, up and down.
Well, thank you for that. But you should have enlarged the circles on your inset to make the visual a little more, a little more comparable, because it looks like we have a horrible problem in Greater Minnesota. You have no problem in the metro, and I know it's not true. There are a number of wells and aquifers in the metropolitan area that are suffering and are declining, and I just didn't want those to go unhighlighted because their dots were too small.
Chair Fisher, Representative Torkelson, if I may respond.
Go ahead, Dr. Jennings.
I know that the Met Council does have a great report that shows 2040 projections for the metropolitan area with significant cones of depression or decreases in water level up to 40 feet under all of the major pumping centers in the suburbs, primarily because the cities rely, St. Paul and Minneapolis rely on river water, but the suburbs would have significant depression in their water levels if they did not do something now. And Met Council report also documents what approaches could be taken. One of the cities that is most interested in groundwater recharge in the metropolitan area is Eagan. John Eaton is a very forward-looking utility manager for the city of Eagan. He likes to have a 100-year plan. And he has approached the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency in the past about recharging groundwater at the edge of his 10-year flow field and eventually having that come out of the muni wells in 10 years. And he says he can do it with a 250-gallon per minute pump running 24/7, so it's also affordable for him.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then my second point would be one on resources. You know, this is a great idea, I think, you know, evaluating our groundwater resources and using these state available agencies to do this. I just think that we've got the Clean Water Fund and we've got LCCMR, either of which would be appropriate for this sort of work. And I would hope that the author would consider working with the proposers to make sure they get applications into both of those areas.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Torkelson. Any other questions? For our testifier, is there anyone in the audience who would like to speak for or against the bill? Hearing none, I will renew my. Whoops, I'm sorry.
I can't help but comment on the
go ahead, Representative
Torkelson. Bottled water. Is it efficient to import bottled water from Iceland?
Representative Torkelson, if I can respond, I looked for water from Minnesota and didn't find any. I thought of taking it out of the pond down the road, but it was frozen over. And I thought the best compromise was Iceland.
Representatives,
I have to say that the watercolor is, however, Minnesotan.
Representative Torkelson, any other comments? Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On that track, I think a person could have just went up to Coleraine and got some water a little cheaper. And at some point, I don't know if it's feasible or not, run a 24-inch line from the Iron Range down to the Twin Cities area if you really value your water. we got something we can sell you.
Thank you, Representative Sandeed.
Representative and Mr. Chair, I have jumped from the cliffs into those lakes in, on the Iron Range, and I can testify the water is clear, bright, and cold.
Any further comments? Hearing none, I will renew my motion that House File 1141 be recommended to be re-referred to the Environment Finance Division. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion carries.
Thank you.
And now we're going to switch out chairs here, and I will be presenting the next bill.
Members, the next bill up for consideration today is House File 1316. It was referred to the Water Division by the Environmental Finance Commission. Chair Fisher, do you wish to move House File 1316 be re-referred to the Environmental Finance Division?
Yes, I would recommend, I would make that motion.
Chair Fisher, please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a very short, simple bill. Currently, the Legislative Water Commission has a sunset on it that would cause the commission to go out of existence at the end of this fiscal year for the state, which would be June 30th of 2019. When the commission was first established 5 years ago, we put a sunset on it because we were not too sure how effective the commission would be, where we were going to go, etc. And I think one of the things that I've learned by serving on the commission for the last 5 years is that many of the issues that face our state today are very complex, require a lot of thought, something that can't always be done within the committee that time that we have here typically during session. Some of the things that we've been able to do is come up with a lot of good stakeholder input. A lot of times we need to bring people to the tables and be able to discuss where everybody is on the issue, try to come to some agreement, and we've had some very good success. You take a look, there's a number of bills that are moving this year that were recommendations of the Legislative Water Commission. Some other things that I know that are also very important is some of the things that have been happening is we've been seeing more pilot projects coming up about how to deal with our water issues out there. We heard some recommendations today of reports coming forward. And one of the things that I've learned more and more as I've been exposed to water is that, first of all, because it acts so differently in different parts of the state, the way we might solve the issue in metro areas could be much differently in the southwest metro, in the southwest corner of the state, or the southeast corner. And because of that, when we start putting pilot projects out there, they take time to be able to establish, they take time to get results back in, and then it takes a lot of time for us to be able to process it. And being able to have the Legislative Water Commission continue on so that we can deal with that instead of every 5 years coming back with another sunset saying, let's continue on so that as these pilot projects that we're putting forth this year, the ones that we've put forth in the past, have the time to be implemented, to collect the data, and then be able to not only return it to us, but then give us the time to be able to process it, engage the stakeholders, and figure out what are the best policy solutions as we move forward so that we can become more proactive instead of reactive as we have been in the past. And I feel that we're starting to move in that direction of becoming more proactive and giving us the opportunity in a very bipartisan way to address some challenging issues of our state. At this point, I'll stand for questions.
Is there anyone in the audience who, is there anyone on the committee who would like to answer a question? Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Representative Fisher. The only thing I would add, I think it would be appropriate to add another sunset, bringing these back and reconsidering their need for existence, I think is appropriate. I believe the Senate is considering doing that, and I would support that initiative. I don't know if there's a year figure in mind, but something like 5 years would be appropriate to give this another look.
Okay.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Torkelson, thank you for the suggestion. I'll definitely be open to that as we go forward. I'm not sure what their time length is that's being supported this time, but I would be open to that.
Representative Heisman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So before I came to the legislature, I was a watershed district manager, and that particular watershed district is gone. And part of the reason is that, number one, in my particular county, the jurisdiction was relatively small, and in a lot of ways there was a duplication of effort. And it came at, of course, a cost to operate a watershed district. At some point, and I'm thinking that when folks put a sunset in place, and as I'm reading some information relative to the Legislative Water Commission, it appears that it had gone away in years past and then was brought back. Are the goals really relevant in the context of what is now possibly a duplication of effort? Has there been any kind of a cost-benefit analysis? What are the major accomplishments that we might point to and say that we absolutely have to make sure that this continues forward?
Chair Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Heinzman. Yes, I do feel that we've had a lot of opportunities, and I think when you take a look at the payback, I don't always see it necessarily as a payback as how many dollars that we saved, while there may be some in those in the process where we found streamlining. An example would be like the one watershed bill that I had up, the Clean Water Legacy Act earlier. That was something that came out of these kind of efforts that had come forward. And I think those are some things that we found. Some things that we're still looking at is what are better ways that we can streamline the organization going forward in terms of how we deal with water in the state. I think one of the biggest challenges that we have right now is currently the way we deal with water is segmented into so many different silos, whether it's Ag, Bowser, DNR, Department of Health. I mean, you can go through and you've got almost two hands full of agencies there. And it raises the question, is there a better way that we should be doing our water governance? And the reason I mention that is right now is when I'll use our local community. When our local community wants to do something with stormwater, when I was first starting, they'd have to go through like three or four different stops in the process. And it'd be easier for people if there was one stop they could go to and be able to have the permit processed from there instead of going from Department A to Department B to Department C. And the reason I highlight the stormwater is because that was some of the first things that I ran into when I first started is that we have White Bear Lake in our area, which is being impacted by groundwater pumping. And one of the things that some of our communities said, you know what, we can do a lot more with being able to hold stormwater back on the land and being able to reuse that stormwater for irrigation purposes. And what we found out is that there were a number of laws that we had put in past that we put in effect in the past that prevented them from just being able to go and do that. They had to get a permit from the MPCA. They had to get a permit from the DNR to say how much you could pump on areas that were not natural lakes but were man-made water features. And so there are a lot of complications things. And so sometimes we may not find that it saves us money, but we may find that the beneficiary may be our local communities and our local businesses and our local citizens finding that they have to spend less time in and dealing with water issues as they work with us here at the state. So that's sometimes where you'll see the dollars, not always at our level, but at the point of contact where our customers are coming to us.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Heinzman.
Thank you for the opportunity for follow-up, Mr. Chair. So I think that you covered quite a number of things in the comments, and I'm glad that at this level we have an opportunity to work on each of those issues. I think you mentioned a couple relative to your district, and I see lots of opportunities of legislators coming to the table with these concerns inside their communities and addressing them. Not saying that these folks shouldn't have that opportunity, but I'm trying to figure out how that they are relevant in this scenario, and I think that the argument could be made that they are. But I'm just trying to make sure that that investment is providing the end result that we're looking for. And to that point, what does it cost to operate the Legislative Water Commission?
Chair Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hintzman, you asked the question and the number slipped out of my mind. I'm going to try to see if Director Jim Stark might have it. For some reason, the number of about $150,000 a year comes to mind, but I can't remember if that's the current accurate one or not. If I could phone it. That's Representative Stark, or excuse me, Mr. Stark mentions that's quite close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That helps me out quite a bit, and we'll go ahead and, I think, move forward at this point. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other questions from the committee? I believe there's a gentleman who would like to testify on this bill. Would you please take a seat, introduce yourself, and address the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities. Back when the Legislative Water Commission was reconvened at the legislature, I was one of the people who helped present that information along with Representative Torkelson to recreate it. The reason was that there was a significant gap, that we had tremendously complex and difficult water issues coming up, and a lot of members just had not had the time to really dig in and understand how all these different agencies are involved, and committees really aren't set up well for that when you have hours of discussion and experts to bring in and discuss things with. I was hearing it regularly from city folks, city engineers, public works directors, people who really felt they weren't getting an opportunity to explain what they needed and how they needed it, and that's what that commission kind of does. And I think if you want to look at real, to kind of address, Mr. Chair, the question that was asked, I think there have been some very real financial benefits for those of us who are working with federal and state regulations in this state, because when the issues are coming up in front of the Legislative Water Commission, it brings a level of attention to them that draws all the agencies into the room, has the major legislative players paying attention, and all of a sudden there's an interest in getting a problem fixed. And it might not always end up needing to be a legislative fix. A lot of times it can be addressed without it ever having to come here in a bill, and that has happened pretty frequently as a result of discussions happening at the Legislative Water Commission, which I think is a nice gain. The public has had a better opportunity to hear some of those details, which I think is also beneficial. It lessens the amount of controversy when the issue does end up coming to the legislature, if everyone kind of has a little better understanding of how it ended up being the proposal that is there. It has not come to be similar to the way the old Legislative Water Commission was back a million years ago when it previously existed in the early 90s. At that time, it was a partisan commission that was the majority party had a majority of the seats, and a bill dealing with water had to be approved by that commission in the interim or it was not going to be heard in committees the next session. It was a very different kind of structure. This is designed more to be a place where complicated issues can be chewed on a little deeper, and then if there is a good answer, bring it forward. And so it's a little different purpose than the old one used to be. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Are there any other questions for Mr. Johnson? I'm Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this is more of a comment than anything else, and I appreciated Mr. Johnson's testimony, especially when he got to the part major legislative players at the table, and as a new appointee to that table, I didn't think of myself in that context, but it was nice of you to say that. And it's also interesting to hear sort of the background as to how the makeup of the commission might have looked in years past, and hopefully I find that what you're describing is the case where we're being deliberative and working together, not just in a partisan way, which it sounds like it might have been in years past. And there is probably a lot to consider in moving the sunset back or eliminating it, but that'll be, I guess, a future conversation.
Is there anyone else in the audience who'd like to testify on the bill? Seeing none, Chair Fisher, do you have final comments on the bill?
Just thank you for the opportunity. I ask for a green vote.
Chair Fisher renews his motion that House File 1316 were recommended to be re-referred to the Environmental Finance Division. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? The motion prevails. With that, Chair Fisher?
Just go ahead. We can. Is there any other business?
Is there any other business?
Go ahead and gavel.
Thank you, Chair. With that, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.